You're listening to Wikisleep Podcast, a podcast designed to help you relax and unwind through calm, quiet storytelling. I'm your host, Adrian Sala. Today's episode is on Nero, the fifth emperor of Rome, who's been described by many as tyrannical, self-indulgent, and debauched. Nero was born on December 15th in the year 37 AD in modern-day Anzio, about 51 kilometers south of Rome. He was an only child, the son of politician Gnaeus Domitius Ahenobarbus and Agrippina the Younger. His mother was the sister of the third Roman emperor, Caligula. Nero was also the great-great-grandson of former emperor Augustus. Contemporary historian Suetonius tells that Nero's father was known to be irascible and brutal. Nero's father died in the year 40 AD. A few years before his death, Domitius was involved in a serious political scandal, and Nero's inheritance was taken from him, and he was set to live with his paternal aunt, Domitia Lepida the Younger. Nero's mother married Claudius in 49 AD, becoming his fourth wife. After Emperor Caligula's death, Claudius became the new Roman emperor. By February, Agrippina persuaded Claudius to adopt her son Nero. After Nero's adoption by the emperor, Claudius became part of his name, and he was officially known as Nero Claudius Caesar Drusus Germanicus. To mark the adoption, Claudius had gold coins issued. The coins, through their distribution and imagery alike, showed that a new leader was in the making. However, it has been noted that despite this, Nero's stepbrother, Britannicus, was more prominent in provincial coinages during the era. Nero formally entered public life as an adult in 51 AD at around 14 years old. When he turned 16, he married Claudius's daughter, his stepsister, Claudia Octavia. Emperor Claudius died in 54 AD. Many ancient historians believe that he was poisoned by Nero's mother. Historian Schotter wrote that Claudius's death in 54 AD has usually been regarded as an event hastened by Agrippina, due to signs that Claudius was showing a renewed affection for his natural son, Britannicus. Tacitus says that the poison maker Locusta prepared the toxin, which was served to the emperor by his servant, Allatus. He also writes that Agrippina arranged for Claudius's doctor, Xenophon, to administer poison in the event that the emperor survived. Before Claudius's death, Agrippina had maneuvered to remove Claudius's son's tutors in order to replace them with tutors that she had selected. She was also able to convince Claudius to replace two prefects of the Praetorian Guard with Afranius Burrhus, who would become Nero's future guide. Since Agrippina had replaced the guard officers with men loyal to her, Nero was able to assume power without incident. He was just 16 years old when he became the Emperor of Rome. As Pharaoh of Egypt, Nero adopted the royal title of Emperor Nero, ruler of rulers, chosen by Ptah, beloved of Isis, the sturdy-armed one who struck the foreign lands. Victorious for Egypt, ruler of rulers, chosen of none who loves him. Most of what we know about Nero's reign comes from three ancient writers, Tacitus, Suetonius, and Greek historian Cassius Dio. According to these ancient historians, once in power, Emperor Nero launched construction projects that were overly extravagant. A large number of expenditures under Nero left Italy exhausted of money and the provinces ruined. Modern historians, though, note that the period was riddled with deflation and that it is likely that Nero's spending came in the form of public works projects and charity intended to ease economic troubles. Nero's tutor, Seneca, prepared his first speech before the Senate, and during the speech, Nero spoke about eliminating the ills of the previous regime. He promised to follow the Augustan model in his Principate, to end all secret trials related to the corruption of court favorites and freedmen, and above all, to respect the privileges of the Senate and individual senators. His respect of the senatorial autonomy, which distinguished him from Caligula and Claudius, was generally well received by the Roman Senate. It is believed that Nero's mother, Agrippina, meant to rule the empire through her son. She murdered her political rival, Domitia Lepida the Younger, the aunt that Nero had lived with during Agrippina's exile. Marcus Junius Silanus, a great-grandson of Augustus and Narcissus. One of the earliest coins that Nero issued during his reign shows Agrippina on the coin's opposite side. Usually, this would be reserved for a portrait of the emperor. But the relationship between mother and son would soon sour. Historian Schotter wrote this about the deteriorating relationship. What Seneca and Burrhus probably saw as relatively harmless in Nero, his cultural pursuits and his affair with the slave girl, Claudia Acte, were to Agrippina signs of her son's dangerous emancipation of himself from her influence. When Agrippina threatened to side with Nero's stepbrother, Claudius's son Britannicus, Nero had him poisoned. Nero then exiled Agrippina from the palace when she began to cultivate a relationship with his wife, Octavia. Despite his familial turmoil and challenges to his reign, Nero's early administration ruled to great acclaim. Especially well received were fiscal reforms, which among others put tax collectors under more strict control by establishing local offices to supervise their activities. After an incident whereby a high-ranking citizen was murdered by a desperate slave, Nero allowed slaves to file complaints about their treatment to the authorities. According to Tacitus, the source of conflict between Nero and his mother was amplified by Nero's affair with Poppaea Sabina. Tacitus writes that Agrippina opposed Nero's affair because of her affection for his wife, Octavia. To rid himself of his meddling mother, Nero had his former freedman, Anicetus, arrange a shipwreck during a voyage on which Agrippina was aboard. However, she survived the wreck and swam ashore, but was then executed by Anicetus, who reported her death as a suicide. Many scholars believe that Nero's reign had been going well in the years before Agrippina's death. But after Agrippina's exile, Burrhus and Seneca were responsible for the administration of the empire. Nero's conduct became far more egregious after his mother's death. Historian Miriam T. Griffins suggests that Nero lost all sense of right and wrong and listened to flattery with total credulity after her death. He began to build a new palace, the Domus Transitoria, from around the year 60 AD. It was intended to connect all of the imperial estates with the Palatine. In 62 AD, Nero's trusted advisor Burrhus died. After Burrhus's death, Nero appointed two new Praetorian prefects, Fannius Rufus and Ophonius Tigellinus. Politically isolated, his former advisor Seneca was forced to retire. That same year, Nero called for the first treason trial of his reign and began violently affirming his power. He executed his rivals, Cornelius Sulla and Rubellius Plautus. Many consider this to be a turning point in his relationship with the Roman state. Mallet's writes that Nero abandoned the restraint he had previously shown because he believed a course supporting the Senate promised to be less and less profitable. According to Tacitus, Nero divorced his wife Octavia on grounds of infertility and then banished her. After public protests over her exile, Nero accused her of adultery and she was executed. Then, in 64 AD, he married Pythagoras, a freedman. The Great Fire of Rome began on the night of July 18th, 64 AD. Rome had always been vulnerable to fire, and this one was fanned to catastrophic proportions by the seasonal Mediterranean winds. Tacitus and Cassius Dio describe the destruction of mansions, ordinary residences, public buildings and temples on the Aventine, Palatine, and Caelian Hills. The fire burned for over 7 days before it subsided, but then it started again and burned for three more. It completely destroyed three of Rome's 14 districts and severely damaged seven more. Many Romans at the time thought the fire was an accident. The merchant shops where it probably started were timber framed, they sold flammable goods, and the outer seating stands of the circus were timber built. But others claimed that it was arson committed on Nero's behalf. Suetonius wrote that Nero started the fire to clear the site for his planned palatial golden house. This would include lush artificial landscapes and a 30-meter-tall statue of himself, the Colossus of Nero, more or less where the Colosseum stands today. The popular legend that Nero played the fiddle while Rome burned is at least partly a literary construct of Flavian propaganda, and is almost entirely untrue. Tacitus suspends judgment on Nero's responsibility for the fire, as he found that Nero was an Antium when it started. Upon learning of the fire, he returned to Rome to organize a relief effort, providing for the removal of bodies and debris, which he paid for from his own funds. After the fire, he opened his palaces to provide shelter for the homeless and arranged for food supplies to be delivered in order to prevent starvation among the survivors. Tacitus writes that to remove suspicion from himself, Nero accused Christians of starting the fire. According to this account, many Christians were arrested and brutally executed by being thrown to the beasts, crucified, and being burned alive. Houses built after the fire were spaced out, built in brick and faced by porticos on wide roads. Nero also built himself a new palace complex, known as the Domus Aurea, in an area cleared by the fire. The cost to rebuild Rome was immense, requiring funds the state treasury did not have. To find the necessary funds for the reconstruction, Nero's government increased taxation. In particular, heavy tributes were imposed on the provinces of the empire, which were, of course, unpopular. In 65 AD, Gaius Calpurnius Piso, a Roman statesman, organized a conspiracy against Nero with the help of a tribune and centurion of the Praetorian Guard. According to Tacitus, many conspirators wished to rescue the state from the emperor and restore the republic. A freedman, Milicus, discovered the conspiracy and reported it to Nero's secretary. As a result, it failed and its members were executed, including Lucan, the poet. Nero's previous advisor, Seneca, was accused by Natalis in the conspiracy. He denied the charges, but was still ordered to commit suicide, as by this point he had fallen out of favor with Nero. In a controversial story, Nero was said to have kicked Pompey to death in 65 AD, before she could have his second child. But many modern historians, noting probable biases of contemporary historians of the era, propose that Pompey may have died after miscarriage or in childbirth. Nero went into deep mourning at her passing. Pompey was given a sumptuous state funeral, divine honors, and was promised a temple for her cult. A year's worth of incense was burned at the funeral. Her body was not cremated, as would have been customary, but embalmed in the Egyptian manner and entombed, but it is not known where. In the year 67, Nero married Sporus, a young boy who was said to have greatly resembled Pompey. Nero had him castrated, tried to make a woman out of him, and married him in a dowry and bridal veil. In March 68 AD, Gaius Julius Vindex, a regional governor, rebelled against Nero's tax policies. Lucius Virginius Rufus, the governor of Germania Superior, was ordered to put down Vindex's rebellion. In an attempt to gain support from outside his own province, Vindex called upon Servius Sulpicius Galba, the governor of Hispania Tarraconensis, to join the rebellion and to declare himself emperor in opposition of Nero. At the Battle of Vesontio in May, Virginius's forces easily defeated those of Vindex, and the latter committed suicide. However, after defeating the rebels, Virginius's legions attempted to proclaim their own commander as emperor. While Nero had retained some control of the situation, support for Galba increased, despite his being officially declared a public enemy. The prefect of the Praetorian Guard, Sabinus, also abandoned his allegiance to the emperor and came out in support of Galba. In response, Nero fled Rome with the intention of going to the port of Ostia and, from there, to take a fleet to one of the still loyal eastern provinces. According to Suetonius, Nero abandoned the idea when some army officers openly refused to obey his command, responding with a line from Virgil's Aeneid: "Is it so dreadful a thing to die?" Nero then toyed with the idea of fleeing to Parthia, throwing himself upon the mercy of Galba, or appealing to the people and begging them to pardon him for his past offenses. And if he could not soften their hearts, to entreat them at least to allow him the prefecture of Egypt. Suetonius reports that the text of this speech was later found in Nero's writing desk, but that he dared not give it from fear of being torn to pieces before he could reach the forum. Nero returned to Rome and spent the evening in the palace. At about midnight, he awoke to find the palace guard had left. Dispatching messages to his friends' palace chambers for them to come, he received no answer. Upon going to their chambers personally, he found them all abandoned. When he called for a gladiator or anyone else adept with a sword to kill him, no one appeared. He cried, "Have I neither friend nor foe?" and ran out as if to throw himself into the Tiber. Returning, he sought a place where he could hide and collect his thoughts. An imperial freedman, Phaon, offered his villa, located 4 miles outside the city. Traveling in disguise, Nero and 4 loyal freedmen reached the villa, where Nero ordered them to dig a grave for him. At this time, a courier arrived with a report that the Senate had declared Nero a public enemy, that it was their intention to execute him by beating him to death, and that armed men had been sent to apprehend him for the act to take place in the Roman Forum. However, in reality, the Senate was still reluctant in deliberating on the right course of action, as Nero was the last member of the Julio-Claudian family. Most of the senators had served the imperial family all their lives and felt a sense of loyalty to the deified bloodline, if not to Nero himself. In truth, the senators actually had the goal of returning Nero back to the Senate, where they hoped to work out a compromise with the rebelling governors that would preserve his life, so that at least a future heir to the dynasty could be produced. Nero did not know this, and at the news brought by the courier, he prepared himself for suicide, pacing up and down, muttering, "What an artist dies in me." Losing his nerve, he unsuccessfully begged one of his companions to set an example by killing himself first. At last, the sound of approaching horsemen drove Nero to face the end. However, he still could not bring himself to take his own life, and instead forced his private secretary to perform the task. When one of the horsemen entered and saw that Nero was dying, he attempted to stop the bleeding, but efforts to save his life were unsuccessful. Nero's final words were, "Too late, this is fidelity." He died on June 9, 68 AD, the anniversary of the death of his first wife, Claudia Octavia, and was buried in the mausoleum of the Domitii Ahenobarbi of Rome. With his death, the Julio-Claudian dynasty ended. When news of his death reached Rome, the Senate posthumously declared Nero a public enemy to appease the approaching rebels and proclaimed Galba as the new emperor. Nero was just 30 years old when he died.